Now we're holding on Yud Aleph on the bays about a third of the way down the Amud. At two dots. So continuing Gaushin in the Psukim of the Megillah. The Pasuk says, by Yom Lahain, in those days, Kesheves HaMelech, when the king sat on his throne, Uchtid Basra, and then the next Pasuk continues, Vishnas Sholish Lamolcha, in the third year of his kingship, is where Achashverosh's kingship, is when he made his big parties. So what was it? Is when he first sat on the throne, or only later on in his third year? So Omar Rava, my Kesheves, Ba'achashinis Yashva Daike. The word Kesheves doesn't mean when he first sat on his throne. It means when his mind was set at ease. Up until now, up until this third year, he thought that the Jews might become independent of him. Now, in the third year, he sees that that's not happening, as we're going to go on to show, and therefore now he felt more at ease, and therefore he made his party. Omar, so he says, what's going on? What do we mean by he's not considering that the Jews are going to become independent anymore? He says, Belshazzar choshevatar, Belshazzar made a mistake, as we're going to say, I'm going to make the calculation, I'm not going to be mistaken. Maihi, so what do we mean? What calculation? So dichtiv. So now you can refer to the paper that I put on the WhatsApp group that gives more of the details, but we'll go through the Gemara. The pasuk says Yehu had said many years earlier, ki lefi melois levav al shivim shana efkadestem. When 70 years have passed for Bavel, then I will remember you, Hashem says, and bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. Ochtiv, but a different pasuk says, "Lamalas v'chorvitz Yerushalayim shivim shana," to fill in 70 years from the destruction of Yerushalayim. Actually, the Rashash says this pasuk, the second pasuk, is a little bit out of place over here. It belongs later on in the sugya, where we're going to point out that there were different possible beginning points for the 70 years. Now that's the point. In other words, Yirmiyahu had said that there's going to be 70 years of Babel, but 70 years from what? So as we're going to say, Belshazzar calculated from when Nebuchadnezzar, from when Babel first became a world power. So, Chashoyv Aboin V'chomesh to Nebuchadnezzar. So Belshazzar figured he had 45 years that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. Okay, we're saying on the paper over here it was really 44 and a fraction, but right now we're talking whole years. The Esrim Plas to Evel Meroidach, 23 years of Evel Meroidach, makes 68 so far. The Tauti V'day, 2 years of Belshazzar himself, Hashivim, so that makes up 70. So now, when he started his third year, and he saw, look at this, the Jewish people haven't been redeemed, Hashem hasn't brought them back to Eretz Yisrael, so he figured it's not going to happen. Either he thought that the Nevuah is not true, or, I mean, it would have been hard to do that. Everybody knew that Yirmiyah was a Navi Emes. So some of the Mephoshim point out, I think that Ion Yaakov points out, that maybe he figured they might have lost the schus to be redeemed after 70 years because they bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, as we're going to talk about later in the Gemara. Whatever the case, he figured 70 years are up, and nothing happened. Because at this point, again, you have between the reign of Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar's son Evel Meroidach, and Evel Meroidach's son Belshazzar, so far we've got 70 years. Afik money to be Makdisha, so he took out the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash, which had been plundered many years earlier by Nebuchadnezzar, the Ishtamash Bahu, and he used them. Up until that point, all the kings of Babel, even though they had these Kalim of the Beis Mikdash in their treasuries or in temples of their Getchkes, whatever it is, they didn't dare use them because they knew that they were going to call down anger from Hashem on themselves. But Belshazzar now figured the 70 years are up, nothing's happening, I can do whatever I want. So he did that. And then the upshot was, as the pasuk goes on to describe, there was the famous handwriting on the wall, and Daniel came and explained to Belshazzar that the message means that your time is up, your kingdom is over. So, first of all, let's figure out, how do we know those figures? When we said Nebuchadnezzar was king 45 years, and Evel Meroidach 23, and so forth, how do we know those figures? Nebuchadnezzar menolam de'aboy v'chomesh shanin malach, how do we know that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years? So, like this, de'omamar, we learn in the Braisa, about the various goliaths of the Jewish people, golu b'sheva, golu b'shmoina, they went into golos in the 7th year, and in the 8th year, Golub Shmoina Esrei, Golub Tshaesrei. They went into Golos in the 18th year, and they went into Golos in the 19th year. Now, the point is, the Braisa goes on to explain, we don't mean that there were four separate Goliaths, we mean that there were two. One, there were two 11 years apart. Namely, the point is, because when you look at the Psukim, you have these Goliaths are described at the end of Sefer Melachim. They're also described at the end of Sefer Yirmiyah. And there's a little inconsistency between them, because in one place it says that the first Golos of Yechonia, together with the Choresh Vamaskir, this is what we mentioned, the Megillah Asher Hoglam Yerushalayim, that Mordechai was exiled from Yerushalayim, Ima Gola Asher Hoglosa, Im Yechonia Melech Yehuda. So that in one place it says that took place in the seventh year, in another place it says it took place in the eighth year. So what it means is, Golu v'sheva l'kibush yoyokim, Golus yoyokim, so in the seventh year, since Nebuchadnezzar had conquered, had dominated Yehoyakim, and made Yehoyakim, who was one of the last kings of Yehuda, his vassal, from then, counting 7 years later, you had Golus yoyokim, you had then Yechonia. Yehoyakim's son was taken into Golus. B'kitzur, Yehoyakim was the king of Yehuda. He was an out-and-out Rasha. He had been a vassal of Nebuchadnezzar for several years. Then he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar invaded and put down the rebellion, killed Yehoyakim, or actually the Medrash mentions possibilities that maybe Yehoyakim died as they were lowering him out the down the wall to Nebuchadnezzar. Whatever the case, he's dead. Yechonia was appointed king instead. Then Nebuchadnezzar comes and captures Yechonia and takes him together with the great Talmid Chachamim, the Choresh V'Hamaskir, into Golus. In any case, so that was 7 years since Nebuchadnezzar had first conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Yehoyakim his vassal. So that's why we call it the seventh year. That is the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar's own rule, because he himself, as we're going to say, started ruling 1 year before he did that. So that's the first Golos. We call it 7/8, because it was 7 years since the conquest of Eretz, since Nebuchadnezzar had become the overlord of Eretz Yisrael, and it was 8 years since Nebuchadnezzar himself had become king. Then you have, the next thing is, you have Tzipiyahu, who is appointed the next and last king of Yehuda. 11 years later comes the Churban, and Golub Shmoina Esra, the Kibosh Yehoyakim, Golus Tzipiyahu, in the 18th year since Yehoyakim was conquered and made a vassal, you have the Golus of Tzipiyahu and the Churban, Shehi Tshasra and Nebuchadnezzar, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's own kingship. So there was always 1 year apart. To Amar Shana Shana Kibesh Ninve, because we also learn in a Braisa that in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he conquered Ninve, which was the capital of Ashur. So previously, Ashur had been the world power. They're the ones who had Sancheirav as king. So now they were falling apart. So Nebuchadnezzar conquered them and put an end to their empire, and now ends the empire, the Assyrian empire, and begins the Babylonian empire, and then. Shnia, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Kibish Yehoyakim, he conquered Yehoyakim and forced Yehoyakim to be his vassal and pay him tribute, etc. So far we've established that the Golos of Yechonia took place in Nebuchadnezzar's eighth year of his reign. That's why, which is why we call it the seventh and the eighth, because it was the seventh since he had conquered Yehoyakim, but the eighth since he himself had begun ruling. Now, Uchtiv, now at the end of Sefer Yirmiyah, also at the end of Melachim, it says, "Vayhi v'shloishim v'sheva shana l'golos Yehoyakim melech Yehuda," in the 37th year of the golos of Yehoyakim, which is another name for Yechonia, the king of Yehuda, the shnei masa chodesh, in the 12th month, the esrim v'chamisha v'chodesh, on the 25th of the month, so the 25th of Adar, then Nebuchadnezzar was dead. Evel Meroidach, his son, took over as king. Nosa Evel Meroidach Melech Bavel v'shnas Malchusa. So Evel Meroidach, the new king of Bavel, in the first year of his reign, lifted up as Rosh Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, the head of Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, meaning the Nosa as Rosh is like when you have in the Pesukim, Nosa as Rosh means to count. Means that he counted, he considered Yehoyakim to be important by Yotze Osim and Beis HaKela, and he took him out of jail. So that was 37 years after Yehoyakim had been taken into Golos and put in jail. So Tamnir Tlosim Besheva. So you have 8 years of Nebuchadnezzar's reign until he imprisoned Yehoyachin, and 30 or Tlosim Besheva, and 37 years after that, Harei Avoyin Vachamish. So there is your 45 that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. Rashi also, in the course of this, discusses some other psukim that you find in this connection and explains how they fit into the chronology. For example, the beginning of Sefer Daniel, it says that in the third year of Yehoyakim, he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Now, what third year? He was king for 11 years. It means the third year since he started revolting. There had been three years from when Nebuchadnezzar started dominating him, where he was. Yehoyakim himself had been king for 4 years by the time Nebuchadnezzar conquered him. He was already in his fourth year. So then for 3 years, he submits to Nebuchadnezzar's overlordship. Then for another 3 years, he rebelled. And that brings us to the 11th year, which is when Nebuchadnezzar invaded Eretz Yisrael and killed him and so forth. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar, we see from the psukim, ruled for 45 years. Because again, all we have to do is take the 8 years till he put Yechoniah in jail, and we said that Yechoniah was in jail for 37 years. Next, the Esther Nitlas to Evel Meroidach. How do we know next that Evel Meroidach ruled for 23 years? Gemara, that we only know the Kabbalah. There's no pasuk that tells us so. The Tauti day. Now again, we're saying that Belshazzar himself had ruled for 2 years by this point when he made his party. And the point is, actually, there's one part, so first of all, Rashi explains, we know that because after all, we need 70 years and now we need 2 years to reach 70. But also, Mephoshim explained also that you have a pasuk someplace in Sefer Daniel that mentions the third year of Belshazzar. There's never any date mentioned after that. And that implies that was the last year of his reign, therefore he only ruled for 3 years or two and a fraction, whatever. Anyway. So now that he figured Hoshavin, so now we're up to 70 years. Omar, so Belshazzar says to himself, Hashta Vadek Tula Mifriki, now surely the Jewish people are not going to be taken out of Golos because 70 years have passed and nothing happened. Apik money to be Makisha, so he took out the Kalim of his Mikdash, the Ishtamish Bahu, and he used them in his poem. The Hainu, the Karmelai, Daniel, that explains what Daniel said to him when Belshazzar and his court saw the writing on the wall, Menei Menei to Cable Pirates, and they couldn't understand what it meant, and they called him Daniel. So Daniel tells him, the Al Morish Maya history Manta, look at what you did, Belshazzar. You raised yourself up in a chutzpahdik way against Hashem, the master of heaven. And they brought the Kalim of his house before you. And he tells Belshazzar, because of that, you lost your kingship and your empire is over. And the pasuk finishes off. That parak finishes off. Bebelelia, on that very night, till Belshazzar, Malka Kastoi, Belshazzar, the Kasti king, the Kastim is a sub-nation of Babel. So on that night, Belshazzar, the Kasti king, was killed. And the next pasuk continues, the Doyovesh Mador Kabal Mahusa, Doyovesh the Modi, the Aporas of Modi, so Doyovesh was from Modi. This is not, by the way, the Doyovesh, the son of Esther. This is Doyovesh the Persian. This is Doyovesh the Mede. And yet again, Aporas of Modi, two different nations that had federated together to form an empire. Anyway, so the Doyovesh Mador Kabal Mahusa, so Doyovesh the Modi received the kingship. Kivar Shin Shikin Matautin when he was 62 years old. So that was it. That was the end of the 70 years. By the way, the Medrash explains why is it important to tell us Daryabish's age. It tells us, actually, if we look back at the calculation we just did, it comes out 62 years before Belshazzar's party and Belshazzar's death. 62 years before that comes out to when Nebuchadnezzar first took Yechoniah into Golos, together with at that point he had taken some of the Kalim of the Beis Hamikdash into Golos, as well as the Talmid Chachamim. So from when Nebuchadnezzar had for the first time entered the Beis Hamikdash and stolen some of its Kalim, right then Daryavesh, who eventually was going to overthrow his empire, was born, showing that the Edishah is always machim before the Maka, that the Edishah always puts the cure before the blow. Anyway, so So now, a few years later, Achashverosh is saying to himself, Omar, Ihu mitatoi, obviously Belshazzar made a mistake, and he paid for it with his life and his kingdom. Enough, chashiv nevloi te'ina. I'm going to remake the same calculation of the 70 years. I'm not going to make a mistake. Because, after all, he says, Miksiv malchus Babel. Yirmiyah never said that the 70 years count from the kingship of Babel, which would imply, like Belshazzar thought, that it counts from when Nebuchadnezzar first became king, and then when you add together the length to the reigns of Nebuchadnezzar plus Evel Merodach plus Belshazzar, then he reached 70. No, the Babel Ksiv. After all, Yirmiyah had said that it's 70 years of Babel. My Babel, the Golos Babel. So it must mean since the Golos of Babel, meaning the first one, the first time when Nebuchadnezzar came and exiled anybody from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. So how much does that make us short? Tamni. It makes 8 years short, because again, Nebuchadnezzar took that first Golos in his eighth year. So now, in other words, like we're saying, it's only, so from Golos Yechonia until Belshazzar's party and until Belshazzar's death, as we said, was 62 years, which is why we said Dariavesh himself was 62 years old. Well then, we need another 8 years to reach 70. Okay, so Achashverosh says, Choshev, so he calculated, the oil chilufayu, instead of the 8 years that are missing, we have to add in, Choda de Belshazzar, the one more year of Belshazzar, because, again, he made this party at the end of the second or beginning of his third year. He still had, you still have to count a year that, already we said in his second year, the 70 years were over. So you have to add the third year of Belshazzar, the Chomesh to Dayavish for Kodesh. Between Dayavish and Kodesh, you have 5 years, because Rashi explains, in other words, that, we have first there was Dayavish, then there was Kodesh who gave permission to the Jewish people to go rebuild Eretz Yisrael. So right now, the Gemara, now, he doesn't say in the Pasuk how long they ruled, but right now the Gemara is assuming that between them they ruled for 5 years. The Tautidi day, two more years of Ahasuerus himself that had already passed, Hoshabin, so now we're up to 70. So now he figures, Kivin the Chazi, the Malu Shabin, now he sees that 70 years have passed and they haven't been redeemed. Omar, he thinks to himself, Ahasuerus, Hashta Vada Chulay Mikriti, now for sure they're not going to be taken out of Golos, because unlike Belshazzar, who calculated from the wrong starting point, I calculated from the right starting point, the Golos of Yechonia, and that was 70 years ago. Afik money to be makdashah. So again, he took out the kalim of the bais mikdash, like Belshazzar did. The ishtamish b'hu, and he used them. They weren't necessarily, by the way, the same kalim. The psukim at the beginning of Sefer Ezra described that in between these events, when Kodesh became king and he announced that the Jewish people can go and rebuild Eretz Yisrael, it says he took out the kalim of the bais mikdash that had been in the treasury of Nebuchadnezzar and gave them to the Jews to bring back to Eretz Yisrael. But the point is, there were actually, that Ramban explains over here, there were actually two different sets of kalim that went into Golos at different times. There was one set that was taken when Nebuchadnezzar arrested Yechonia and put him in jail, and then there was another set that were taken when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the bais mikdash 11 years later. So the original ones that he plundered the first time, those were the ones that went back with Kodesh's proclamation. The second set, the ones that were in the bais mikdash until the very end, those are the ones that were still in Shushan at the time. Remember that the story of Purim happened during the time when the building of the bais mikdash was suspended, as we're going to talk about later. And therefore, so now these kalim are still located in Golos, in Shushan, and Achashverosh was able to use them. So what happened? Bas Satan v'rikib b'nehem. The Satan came and danced between them. In other words, they caused a friction, a rift between Achashverosh and Vashti, a fight between them. And Vashti ended up getting killed. Now, you notice with Belshazzar, it's he got killed. With Achashverosh, it's Vashti got killed. So why is that? There's a couple of points. First of all, Vashti herself was actually a daughter of Belshazzar. So she's actually the descendant of Nebuchadnezzar and the kings after him of Babel. And as we learned before, one of the psichas for Megillas Esther mentioned a pasuk where Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the kingdom of Babel completely, including Neched, which we said, Zu Vashti, I mean, even the grandchildren Vashti. So therefore, her death is like the last part of the defeat of Babel. So therefore, it was more appropriate that she should be killed. Besides which, another point is also Achashverosh had to stay alive because eventually from him is going to come Daryavesh, the second Daryavesh, who actually gave permission for the Beis Hamikdash to continue being rebuilt. Okay. So that's that. So Achashverosh was also wrong in his calculation. But that's why he made that party in his third year, because he thought the 70 years were. You look at my paper over here, you can see he thought 37, 23, 32, 32 equals 70. So the question is, the Gemara says, v'hashakar choshev. Isn't his calculation correct? Where did he go wrong that his party went so wrong? The answer is Ihunami Mitatoi. The answer is Achashverosh made a mistake as well. He's counting from Golas Yechonia. Instead, he should have counted from when Yerushalayim was destroyed. As in fact, you have the pasuk in Daniel that we quoted before that says, "Lamalas v'chorves Yerushalayim shivim shana." So you should have counted from the churban. Well, the Gemara says, "Soif kama v'tziran." Well, in that case, how many are we actually missing? How long was it from Yechonia's golos until Tzidkiyahu's golos in the churban? Chadesar. It's 11 years. Well, ihu kama malach adesar. How long did Achashverosh himself rule? 14 years. How do we know that? Because we know that in the 12th year of Achashverosh was when Haman made his girdle, and that's when you have all the following events of the next few chapters of the Megillah all take place during Achashverosh's 12th year. In the 13th year was the war where the Jewish people defeated their enemies on the 13th and 14th of Adar. And then the following year, the Pasuk says that Mordechai and Esther sent out Igeres HaPurim Azoris HaShenis, the second letter of Purim, telling everybody that they have to celebrate Purim and telling them what the details of the story were. So that was Achashverosh's 14th year. We don't find any more years for him after that. Therefore, we can assume that was his last year. So he was king 14 years. Well, by that logic, in Achashverosh's 14th year, the Beis Hamikdash should have been rebuilt, because at that point, the 70 years are up. Alama ksiv, so why does it say in the Pasuk in Ezra, they dined the Tilas Avidas Beis of the Kodib Yerushalem, that what happened was, so they started building the Beis Hamikdash because of Kodesh's proclamation. Then the Tzora Yehuda ben Yamin, the Kusim, and the other enemies of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael massed on them and claimed that they're trying to rebel. So the kings after him, Kodesh himself, Achashverosh, whatever, rescinded the permission. It remained unfinished for 18 years. Finally, at the end of those 18 years, which again brings us to 70 years from the Churban, then the Nevi'im told them to start rebuilding again, and they got permission from Daryavesh, the son of Achashverosh Master, and that was, the Pasuk says, that it was in the second year of Daryavesh. Now, according to the calculation we just made, the second year of Daryavesh is already 72 years after the Churban. Where were the missing 2 years? And the answer is, Amar Rava Shanim Kutoris Sahu. The answer is, we have to remember that there were incomplete years involved over here. Namely, when we say, again, when we said before that Nebuchadnezzar was king for 45 years, we don't mean a full 45. We mean 44 and a fraction. Whenever Merodach was king for 23 years, it doesn't mean 23, it means 22 and a fraction. Remember, we learned in Masechta Rosh Hashanah that when a person becomes king, we count that's already the first year of his reign, even if there's very little left in the year. We said even if there's only 1 day left in the year, we still count that as the first day of his reign. So take for example with Nebuchadnezzar. So his years as a Goyish king begin in Tishrei. He died, we said, on the 25th of Adar, a little less than halfway through the year. Evel Merodach becomes king now at the end of Adar, and his first year ends at the end of Elul that year. So therefore, between Nebuchadnezzar and Evel Merodach, you don't have full 68 years as we thought originally. You really only have 67 years. And the same way, Daryavesh and Kodesh, in between them, you don't really have 5 full years. You have a little over 4 years. So therefore, you're missing 2 years. Those are the 2 years that are made up for by the fact that the rebuilding began only in the middle of the second year of Daryavesh. So now we're saying, in other words, Achashverosh's calculation was off in 2 ways. Number one, Achashverosh hadn't taken the partial years into account. So when he made his party, it wasn't even full 70 years since Golas Yechonia. It was only about 68 years. And number two, in any case, he calculated from the wrong starting point. He counted from Golas Yechonia rather than he should have counted from the Churban. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi. We learned similarly in Ebraisa that when we said before that it was 70 years until Belshazzar's party, it wasn't actually completely accurate. But Oid Shana Acheres LeBavel, really there should have been one more year of Bavel when Belshazzar was killed. But Amra Dalyavesh Veishlima, Dalyavesh, the first Dalyavesh that is, filled out that 1 year. In other words, what would have happened? There was after all a nevuah that 70 years. If Belshazzar had not been chutzpahdik and used the kalim of the Besmikdash at his party, then he would have gotten to rule one more year upon him, because that would have filled out the 70th year. Like this, it was really only the beginning of the. Like this, it was really only the end of the 69th year when he made his party, and he miscalculated again for these partial years. Moshe points out anyway. I mean, another consideration that should have been taken into account also is: are we counting from when Nebuchadnezzar became king, or conceivably we should count from when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Jehoiakim, from when Nebuchadnezzar first became involved in Eretz Yisrael, which, as we said, was 18 years before the Churban. So maybe then Belshazzar should have been calculating from that. And then for sure there's a year missing. So that shows, in other words, that when we say that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 and Abu Meredach 23, we don't mean full 45 and full 23, we mean fractions, and between the two of them it's really only 67 years. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, Af Daniel Tar Bahai Chushbana. As a matter of fact, Daniel also made the same mistake. Dichtiv, he describes in his sefer, Bishnas Achas Lamalchai, in the first year of the reign of King Dariush, Ani Daniel Binosi Basfarim, I, Daniel, was looking and trying to understand the Sfarim, meaning he's trying to understand what's the deal with the 70 years, because the Jewish people haven't been taken out of Golos yet. And Midikamma Binosi, since he says Binosi, I had to delve into it, Mikal the Torah. That means he made the same kind of mistake that he thought that he didn't take the partial years into consideration, or that he thought that you have to count from when Nebuchadnezzar first became king, or from when he first dominated Eretz Yisrael, rather than from the Churban. And later on in the Perek, he tells how a Malach came and explained to him what it actually is going to mean. So now the Gemara says, "Mekol makom kashu kroy adavi." Still, you seem to have a contradiction in the psukim. Ksiv l'melois l'bavel. After all, Achashverosh has a point. Yirmiyahu and his nevuah had said that when those 70 years filled up for Bavel, which fine, however you want to explain that, whether it means like Belshazzar thought from the beginning of Bavel's reign, or whether you think like Achashverosh that it means from when Bavel first took Jews into Galus. Either way, that's not the same thing as the Churban. Uchtiv v'chorvas Yerushalayim. And then you have the Pasuk in Daniel that says that you count from the destruction of Yerushalayim. So what is it? So when do the 70 years begin and end? So Rava explains, the first one is not saying that there was going to be a complete geula. It means there was going to be a remembrance of Hashem, that Hashem was going to cause that the king of that time, who was Kodesh, is going to give them permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael and start rebuilding. But it doesn't mean that the complete rebuilding is going to take place then. And in fact, that's what happened, that the Tzora Yehuda of Binyamin mastered on them and forced the stoppage of the work for 18 years. So this is what the pasuk means when it says Koyam Kodesh Melech Paras, that Kodesh Melech Paras announces when he becomes king. Hashem, the God of heaven, has given me all of the kingdoms of earth, which we said yesterday it wasn't necessarily literally that he ruled over all of them. He was exaggerating a bit. Anyway, Vahu Fakad Olai, he commanded me, Livnos Beis Bayis, to Yerushalayim, to build him a house, to build the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. So we see, in other words, that they were remembered. He used the same word, pokad, he gave this permission, which was Hashem remembering the Jewish people after 70 years of one aspect of Golos, that now they can go and rebuild. And Moshe points out, I mean, even though the work on the Beis Mikdash was stopped for those 18 years, still it means that during those 18 years, Eretz Yisrael wasn't as desolate as it was before during the 52 years after the Churban, Eretz Yisrael had been completely desolate. Even the animals, the Gemara tells, and the birds, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, had gone away. Now, at least you have Jews living in Eretz Yisrael again, so that's a cause for a certain simcha, even though it wasn't a complete geula. But that's the point, in other words. So really, both things are true. There was 70 years after the beginning of the kingdom of Bavel was Hashem remembered the Jewish people and had Kodesh announce that they can go rebuild the Beis Mikdash. 18 years later, which is 70 years from the Churban, is when Dalyavesh, the second Dalyavesh, said that they can continue rebuilding the Beis Mikdash, that they can finish off the rebuilding of the Beis Mikdash. So both things came true. In a certain sense, you have, you know, sometimes you have like that. For example, when it says about the 400 years in Mitzrayim, the same thing. When do the 400 years count from? The Eibishter could have made it that it counts from when they actually came to Mitzrayim. Instead, he had Rachmanus and counted it from earlier, from the time when Yitzchak Avinu was born. So sometimes you have such things where a time can be counted from one starting point versus from a different starting point, and that, so the actual number of years will come true, but how it comes true can depend. Can depend on Ma'asenu, Vavad Asenu, or other factors that Hashem takes into consideration. By the way, an interesting point in this connection worth mentioning, this historian Josephus tells, now you have Yeshaya gave Nevuas about Kodesh, which we're going to quote one now in the Gemara, and in several of them he actually names Kodesh explicitly. Yeah, but when you think about it, many Nevuas about the future, it doesn't explicitly say the name of the king, but here you have 150 or so years earlier, Yeshaya saying in Nevuah that there's going to be King Kodesh is going to allow the Jewish people out of Golis. So the historian Josephus says that when Kodesh became king, there actually came to him, some of the Chachamim came to him and showed him those psukim, and he was very impressed that 150 years earlier there was a Navi who knew about him and knew his name and everything. So he said, in that case, no question, I have to follow that, and that's why he gave the permission. So in this connection, since we're talking about Kodesh's proclamation, the Gemara says, Dodash of Nachman Baruch Chista, my dichtiv, what does it mean, one of those psukim in Yeshaya, so says Hashem to his anointed one, to Kodesh, whose right hand I have strengthened. So why is that on the face of it? It sounds like we're calling Kodesh Mashiachai. But what does that mean? Was Kodesh actually Mashiach? Or was he even anointed? Was he anointed like with Shemin HaMishcha? No. Ella, what it means is, what the pasuk means, Amalei HaKodesh Baruch Hu Mashiach, means Hashem at that point was saying to Mashiach, Kovel Ani Lecha Al Kodesh. I am complaining to you about Kodesh. So Koyam Hashem L'Mashiach means Hashem says to Mashiach, to the Neshama of Mashiach, regarding Kodesh, L'Chodesh, Asher Chazakti B'Minah, regarding Kodesh, I have a complaint. He didn't live up to what he was supposed to. Ani Amarti Hu Yivnebesi V'Kavetz Kodesh Yisrael. I said that he, as the pasuk continues, that he will build my house and he will gather my Golias together. The actual Lashon HaPasuk is slightly different, but whatever. The point is that Hashem expected that Kodesh is actually going to take the initiative personally and go help build the Beis Mikdash and take the Jewish people out of Golis. Well, who am I instead? All Kodesh did is he announced, Mivachem Mikolam Eliyal, anybody who wants from Hashem's people can go up. In other words, you can do whatever you want, but I'm not getting involved. So therefore, so Hashem is disappointed with Kodesh that he had such high hopes for him and then he didn't live up to them. Rashi points out in this connection, you look in the pasuk in Yeshaya, you notice a very interesting feature. Throughout Tanakh, throughout the 21 books of Tanakh that use the same system of Tzurah, not counting Tilim, Mishlei, and most of Iyov, throughout the rest of the books of Tanakh, you have a Tzurah called Zarka, and whenever you have a Zarka, you always have a couple of words, a word or two words or three words later, you have a segel. Here is the one place in all of Tanakh where you don't. You have the word L'Mashichai, Koyama Hashem, has Munach Zarka. The word L'Mashichai has another Zarka. And then, L'Chodesh HaShoch Zakti B'Minoi, instead begins a different sequence of Turak, Munach Revi. So that hints at the idea that L'Mashichai is the end of one section of the positive. It doesn't go together with L'Chodesh. Because they have, normally you would have Koyama Hashem, L'Mashichai, where L'Chodesh, normally the word Kodesh would have a segel. Instead, it's like broken off, and then you start a new sequence of Turab, hinting at this idea that Kodesh is not what he was supposed to be. That was saying that what L'Mashichai is Hashem speaking to Mashichai, to Mashiach, and complaining to him about, look what Kodesh did or didn't do. So there, and the Turab, therefore, reflect that. Okay, going back now to the drushes of the Megillah, the pasuk says that Achshverosh invited to his first party, Chel Poras Umaday Apartanim. He invited the army of Poras Umaday and the noblemen. So the point is, it says Poras before Umaday, and also more to the point, also it says Rashi says the point is that it says Umaday next to Apartanim, implying that the Paratimim, the nobles, are from Modai. Uchtiv l'malchei Modai Oporas, but then at the end of the Megillah, it mentions the kings of Modai Oporas, implying that the kings are from Modai. So what is it? Were the kings from Modai, or were the noblemen from Modai? That's according to Rashi. Marsha explains the question that the first time it says Moda, it says Poras or Moda, and at the end of the Megillah it says Moda or Poras. So which one was more important? Omar Rava, so Rava says, remember, it was a federation of two different nations that had joined together to form an empire. So Rava says that was the point. Asnuye Asnu Bahadadi. They made a deal with each other when they formed this joint kingship. I minan mauchi, if at a certain point the kings come from our nation, minaychu ifrachi, then the governors and the nobles and whatever will come from your nation. The minaychu mauchi minan ifrachi, and vice versa. If the kings come from you, then the noblemen and the governors and whatnot will be from us. So therefore, so in other words, so at the beginning of the Megillah, you have Chel Poras Umodai HaPautanim, the people of Modai or the Pautanim, because the Hashverish is from Persia. At the end of the Megillah, when it says Amalchim Modai or Poras, it means that there were periods of time during that empire when the kings were from Modai and the ministers and whatnot were from Poras. So that's why you have the order flipped around. Next, the pasuk continues, Bar Oseh Osher Kvod Malchusei, that at this party Achashverosh showed off the wealth of the glory of his kingdom. So, at best, you quote Teferes Kudulosei, it continues in the pasuk. So, Amr of Yosi, Bachanina, Malamet Shalavash Bigdi Kahuna. From that we learn that Achashverosh actually wore the clothes of the Kohenim to his party. And we know that, Sivacha, you quote Teferes Kudulosei, here it describes that Achashverosh had the splendor of the majesty of his greatness. Uchtivasim, Lachovid, or Sifaris, the Bigdi Kahuna also described as Tiferes. So therefore, since it says that he showed off Teferes Kudulosei, means that he showed off the Bigdi Kahuna. So they had been plundered many years earlier from Yerushalayim, by Nebuchadnezzar, and now they were still by him, and now he took them and wore them. Next, the pasuk says, "Ovim lois hayomim ha'elav ha'gomer." At the end of those seven, so he had a 180-day party for the ministers and the army and whatnot, and then there was a 7-day party for the people of Shushan. So Rav and Shmuel argue when Achshverosh did it in that order, first the noblemen and the army and whatnot, and then the people of Shushan, was that a good idea or not? Chadam HaMelech Pikeach Hoya, v'chadam HaMelech Tipish Hoya. One says he was a smart king for doing that, the other one says he was a foolish king. Mandam HaMelech Pikeach Hava Hoya, the one who says that he was smart, means Shaper Ovid, he was doing it in a smart way. Dekar of Rachika Bereisha, that he first is bringing close the ones who are far away, the army and the ministers and whatnot, who are scattered all over the kingdom, he needs to first get them on his side. The people of the city, he can take his time with them. They're under his control. They're under his direct control anyway. They're right there in the capital city. It's very easy for him to dominate them. So therefore, he figured he could wait with getting them on his side. First, it's important to get the ministers and the army and whatnot on his side because they're scattered all over the kingdom. And this way, this will bind them more strongly to him. So that's Melech Pikeach Hoya. Umanda Amatipeshaya, the opinion that says that he was foolish is just the opposite. First, he should be working on getting the people of the city of Shushan on his side. The Imodu Behanach, if the people far away, if the army and the nobles and whatever that are from other parts of the kingdom rebel against him, Hanach, the Imodu Behanach, if those rebel against him, Hani, have a kind of bad day, then the ones in Shushan are going to be on his side and help defend him. So in other words, you always need to make sure that the ones closer to you are going to be on your side first. So therefore, according to that, he was Melech Tipish. He should have first made a party for them to get them on his side and then worry about the far away ones. Okay. Since we're mentioning Ahasuerus' party, so let's talk about that. Shal of Talmud of Esrib Shim Ben Yechoy, mitnei man is chaybus ten en shor Yisrael shav oiz ader kloya. Why were the Senei and Shai Yisrael, which means the Jewish people themselves, in that generation, why were they deserving of being wiped out? Why was there a Gzeira of Haman in the first place? Okay, in the end, v'nafaychu, but why were they even subject to such a Gzeira in the first place? Amalahem imru atem, so Rav Shimon tells us, Talmudim, you say, give me an answer, and then we'll discuss it. Amruloi, so they said, because they enjoyed the Suda of that Rasha, meaning Ahasuerush. The Rebbe used to talk about this, by the way, a lot of times. We're not saying that they ate by the party necessarily, and even the eating itself might not have been a problem. The Gemara discusses further down on the Amud that it was Kitzoyin Mordechai, that everything was according to the way Mordechai wanted, the food was kosher and everything. The problem is that Nenu, Misudasa, Shalai Sarasha, they enjoyed it. They said to themselves, look at this, we finally made it. We're finally equal citizens with everybody else. We enjoy Ahasuerus' favor. What more do we need than that? So the Eibishter shows them, you think so, you can find that your situation in Golos is a lot more precarious than you thought. Anyway, so that was the answer they gave. So Shimon tells them, Im Kain, by that logic, Sheba Shushan Yehogu, only the ones who are in Shushan should be killed. Sheba Chala Elam Kola Yehogu. Why is the Gzera on the whole rest of the empire? They didn't eat from Ahasuerus' Suda. They didn't enjoy Ahasuerus' Suda. So the Chacham say, okay, the Talmidim say, okay, fine. Emer Atta, so okay, you don't like our answer, you say an answer. Amalahem, so Rabbi Shimon tells them, because they had bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. Which, by the way, there are places in Tosfos, in other places in Shas, where Tosfos explains that this statue wasn't even of a Zara per se. It was meant in honor of the king, to glorify the king. But to bow down to it constituted a chil Hashem, and it was Hanani Mishal Ba'azariah stood up against it, but the rest of the Jews did not. Omru Lois, so the Chachamim says, so the Talmidim said to the Shimon, in that case, they taka did bow to the statue, v'chimase ponim yesh b'davar, so what is their favoritism involved over here? The fact is they did bow to it, so therefore, so the Gzera should have actually come out lapoil. Why indeed was the Gzera cancelled? What zchus did they have that the Gzera should be cancelled? Amalahem, so Rav Shimon answers them, Heimloi osu elolafonim, because to begin with, when they bowed down to the statue in Nebuchadnezzar, they didn't do it because they really believed in the, let's say, going according to the opinion that it was Avodah Zarah. They didn't really believe in the Avodah Zarah that it represents, or they didn't really believe in whatever it is that it's supposed to represent. They were only doing it lafonim. They're only doing it on the surface out of fear, because they're afraid of Nebuchadnezzar's reaction if they disobey. As in fact, we see that he got angry at Hanani Mishal Ba'azariah and threw them into the fire. So the same way, when Hashem acted against them and brought the Zera of Haman, he also did it as like a pretend thing. He made it that it looks like Haman is going to exterminate them, Chas v'Shalom. And in the end, Hashem was planning all along that Haman is going to get defeated and the Jewish people are going to be saved. The same way as they acted only, you know, they were pretending, so Hashem, so to speak, also pretended. Behind it, kilo inami liboy, as the pasuk says, Hashem doesn't want in his heart to afflict the Jewish people. So the same way over here, in other words, Hashem wasn't doing it just that he really wanted to. He had to do it on the surface in order to clean up that problem of them bowing down to the Nebuchadnezzar statue. There is actually an interesting point that's made in this when you think about it. So what happened? In Shushan itself, right away, they knew what was going on. In the rest of the provinces of the kingdom, many Mephoshim talk about the idea based on the wording of the Megillah, that in the other provinces, Haman didn't actually send out explicit instructions saying, kill all the Jews on the 13th of Adar. Because he knew that if such instructions get out, if it leaks out, then they're going to be doing everything they can to petition Ahasuerus to take that back. So therefore, he just sent out messages that said everybody has to be ready. All the nations in the empire have to be ready to fight on the 13th of Adar, whichever enemy we tell you at the time. Where, of course, he knew he had sent secret messages to the governor that the enemy in question is the Jewish people. So therefore, in Shushan itself, the Jews knew that they were slated to be killed. Well, therefore, that fits with the fact that they were the ones who Nenu Misudasa Shalai Sarasha. On the other hand, in the rest of the empire, they Bechlal didn't know to begin with until the actual 13th of Adar came that they were ever in danger. So therefore, to the extent that they were worried, because it might be against them, then that was only lafanim. It was only a pretend thing. Especially they didn't realize. Here is another point also, that by the time the news reached the other provinces, Haman was long since dead. I mean, he was dead 3 days after he made his Zera. So when you think about it, only in Shushan did they ever have any actual genuine fear of Haman. In the rest of the kingdom, they never even did, because by the time they get the news, they didn't know that Haman is long since dead. So therefore, in that sense, it was only pretend, and that's what we're saying, that was because they had pretended to bow down to the Nebuchadnezzar statue. Okay. Moving along in the Megillah, the pasuk says, "Bahatsar ginas visan amelach," that Ahasuerus made the party in the chotzer, the garden, the orchard of the king. So chatzar means the chotzer, means an open area. Ginas means a garden, like where you grow vegetables. And Bisan means an orchard where you have trees. So what is it? Where was the party? Rav Shmuel, so Rav and Shmuel disagree with that. Chad Omer, one says it means Haroi L'chotzer L'chotzer, whoever was of the caliber that they belong in the Chotzer, like in the least important place, L'chotzer, then Achashverosh had them seated in the Chotzer. Haroi L'gina, somebody who's on a higher level, more important, who deserves to be in the garden, would be L'gina. Haroi L'bisan, and whoever deserves to be in the orchard, L'bisan, would be in the orchard. So different places depending on people's rank. The other explanation says, Hashivan b'chotzer v'layach zikasan. He put them, he started by putting them in the chotzer, but it wasn't big enough for all of them. Begina v'layach zikasan. Then he put the next, the overflow he put in the garden, and it still wasn't enough. Avsheich nisim l'bisan, until finally he brought them into the orchard v'layach zikasan, and that had room for all of them. In a braisa, we learn a third possibility. Means hoshivan b'chotzer, means he put them, he seated them in the chotzer. He had two doors open, one that leads to the garden, one that leads to the orchard. So this way, Ben Yoyada explains, like this, it might be boring for them to stay in the same place for too long in the chotzer. So therefore, he made doors, he arranged that there should be doors into the gina and the bisan, so they could take a walk when they wanted to and see different scenes. Next, the pasuk describes the decorations by the party. Chur karpas et chevas. So my chur, what does the word chur mean? By the way, in the Megillah, the word chur is written with an extra large ches, and it says that that's a remez to the fact that he wore the eight big kahuna, as we said before. But what does the word chur itself mean? Again, we have machlokes. Rav amar chori chori. Rav says it means hangings that were made by sewing with a needle, and they're made out of material that there was a lot of holes in them, like it was like lace kind of. Or another explanation of chori chori means something that's suitable for noblemen, bnei chorin. Or Shmuel amar milas slavona hitzia lahem. Shmuel says it means he set out for them white silk. Silk in those days is extremely expensive, so if he's able to put out hangings of silk for them, then it shows how rich he was. Next, when it says karpas, what is that? Omer Rav Yosi bar Chanina means korim shel pasim. It means that he put out for them pillows and cushions of pasim. So pasim is like sonus pasim. So pasim is like sonus pasim, like Yosef's coat. And there are, we know that there are, of course, many different explanations what pasim means. It can mean it was made out of silk. It can mean it had many different stripes of colors. Whatever it was, here it means the same kind of thing. As far as the previous one, chur, so Rav had said that it means chori chori, that means that it has many holes, it's lace work. Shmuel said that it's milas levana, which means he's doushing the word chur is noshen chivar, which means white. And karpas then is karim shal pasim, is one made out of silk, made out of colorful silk. Next, it says al glile kesef amudei sheish, that these hangings were on silver rods and on gold and on marble poles. Next, it continues. Mitos zahav v'kesef. They had beds or couches of gold and silver. So why gold and silver? Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Amar Haroi l'kesef l'kesef Haroi l'zahav l'zahav. Whoever was deserving of having a silver one would get a silver one. Whoever was deserving of having gold was on a higher rank would get a gold one. Rabbi Nechemi says, can't be. Can't have a mato kin of a suda. Then that would cause people are going to be jealous of each other. Somebody is going to look over and see that the next guy has a golden one and he only has a silver one. He's going to get jealous. Tosfos points out, it's one thing when we said before about the opinion, the first opinion about chatzar, ginas, bisan. Okay, each one is in their own area. One is in the chotzer, one is in the gina, one is in the bisan. So they don't see each other, so there's no jealousy. But here, they're sitting right next to each other. Ella, so no, Rav Nechemia says, what it means is, heim shel kesef, v'raglehen shel zahav. The frames of the beds were made out of silver, the frames and the seats of the beds were made out of silver, the legs were made out of gold. Where the idea being, the bed itself, the couch itself, would be covered with some kind of spread, the chur karpas of chelis that we said before, but the legs would be exposed, therefore he made the legs out of gold, because those would be visible. Next, the pasuk says that they had a floor over there of bahat v'sheish. So what is bahat? Amar Ravashi, avonim shemischoititos al ba'alehem. It means stones, precious stones that a person has to dig for. Mischoititos, meloshin choitit. A person has to dig and work hard to get such stones and pay a high price for them. So those were the kind that Achashverosh used as the flooring by his party. As we see that the Pasuk praises precious stones and describes them as Avnei Nezer, stones that are fit to be in a crown. A person has to go in a lot of Nisyonis, Alad Masai, on his land, meaning the Pasuk is using this as a metaphor for how in the future the Jewish people are going to be known as the most precious and important of nations when they're living in their land, Eretz Yisrael. So therefore they're compared to precious stones. That misnosis says that a person has to go through tremendous misyonis for them. Rabbeinu Hananel has a different explanation of mischoititos and misnosis. He says, mischoititos is meloshen chet. These are the kind of precious stones that in a kingdom in those days, no commoner would even be allowed to own such precious stones. If he did, then he'd be committing a crime, and he could get in trouble for that. And misnosis means meloshen nisa, meloshen running away. If a person has such a stone in his possession, he would run away rather than have to face the king's police. And the point is that Achashverosh had so many such precious stones that he was able to make a floor out of them. Next, the pasuk continues that there was bat v'sheish, it says v'dar v'secharis. So what does the word dar v'secharis mean? Rav omad dori dori. Rav says it means there were rows and rows of these precious stones around the people. So dar is meloshen, is the word for row in Aramaic. And secharis is meloshen schur, which in Aramaic means surrounding. So it means that he had rows of precious stones surrounding them. Shmuel says, no, Dara means the name of a stone. There's a precious stone which you can find in the seas, in the cities overseas. It's called Dara. Hoshiva be'emtza Suda. So he put that, he took one of those stones and hung it in the middle of the place where the Suda was taking place. And it shone for them like the bright noon. So in that case, Dara is the name of the stone. But Sechora, so Rashi says, is Meloshen Siara, it's related to the Aramaic word Siara, which means the moon, because it is brilliant and bright for them as the moon. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a third explanation of the word V'dar V'secharas, Shekara Dror L'chol Ba'alei Schora. It means that as part of the party, Achashverosh took away, he called freedom, which means freedom, l'chol ba'alei schora, for everybody who has merchandise to sell. In other words, he took off taxes or tolls from them. And that was part of his trying to get everybody on his side, and get everybody's goodwill, is to lower taxes for the merchants. So that's what David says. Next, the Pasuk says, v'hashkis v'chlei zahav, he gave them to drink in golden kelim, which, as we said before, are the kelim of the Mishnah, v'chelim, the kelim shonim, and he gave them different kinds of kelim. So the word shonim is unusual, mishunim ibarilei. The word should not be, the expected word would be mishunim, which means different. Shonim literally means double. So what does that mean? Amar Rava means yatsa basko v'amra lahem. A basko came out and called out to the people by the party, look, what happened? What do you think you're doing? Rishonim kolum miponai, Rishonim kolum mipnei kelim. The earlier group, Belshazzar and his group, when they had their party, they were destroyed because of these kelim. But atem shonim behem, you're repeating the same mistake with those kelim. Shonim, in other words, Meloshim repeating. And as we said before, the result was that Vashti was killed. Next, the Yain Malchus Rav, the Pasuk says there was much royal wine. So what's the word Rav? If it meant a lot, it would be Harbe or something. Omer Rav, Melamed, Shekol Echad V'Echad Yishkohu Yain Shegodol Haymen B'Shanim. Means that each person was given to drink wine that was older than he was, which is a respectable kind of thing. Old wine tastes better. So therefore, the older a person was, the older wine he would get. So that's Rav, like the wine was bigger and older than the person himself was. And the point of that is that way, for example, that way everybody can enjoy wine that's appropriate for them. Then the pasuk continues, Vashsiya chados ein oynes. It says the drinking was according to the law. There was no forcing anybody. So my chados, what does it mean according to the law? Amar Rav Chanan, Mishum Rav Meir, kedos shel Torah. It means that in preparing the menu for the party, Achashverosh followed the rule of the Torah. Ma das shal Torah achila meruba mishsiya. Just like in the Torah, we find there's more food than drink, because when we find by the korbanos,
you look at the proportion of flour that was poured on the Mizbeach versus the proportion of wine that was poured on the Mizbeach, you have much more flour than wine. So you have three asyoinim of solus, which is an isorin of the shiur chala, about 3 pounds or so. So you have three of those, which is about 9 pounds. Meanwhile, the wine is only chatzia hin, where a hin is about a gallon. So chatzia hin would be about a half a gallon, about three or four pounds. So you see that in Torah you have a concept of much more eating than drinking. So the same way, afsu dasi shalais harasha achilam and ruba mashtia. In the same way, Ahasuerus did the same thing. He arranged that there should be more food than drinks. Tosfos does point out, now, if a person eats too much more than he drinks, that also causes health problems. We're talking about there should be, like we're saying over here, there should be somewhat more food than drink. And that's what Ahasuerus did. Next, the pasuk says, Ein oines, there was no forcing. What does that mean? Omer Abelazim, Alamach, Kalachat Ve'achat, Ishkohu Miyein Medinasei. It means that each person was given to drink wine from his own country. Because that way, in other words, the person is not used to wine from a different country. That might have more an effect on him. He might more easily get drunk. So like this, every person was given wine that he's familiar with so that he would know how to drink it in moderation and not have to get drunk. Unless he wants to. That's the Einoin. The pasuk finishes off that Ahasuerus made this party lasis kirtzon ish v'ish, to do according to the will of a man and a man. So literally, it means literally ish v'ish means every person. But Gemara is explaining that ish v'ish means actually according to the will of two specific people. Amar Rava lasis kirtzon Mordechai v'Haman. It means that Ahasuerus made the party according to the will of Mordechai and according to the will of Haman. Mordechai defib ish Yehudi, Haman ish tzar v'oyed. Now, in what sense did he make it like they wanted? So Rashi actually explains that means that they were the Sorei HaMashkim at the party. So therefore, it was all following what they wanted. Different Meforshim talk about different possibilities over here. One of them being that Mordechai didn't want them to come to the party because he didn't want them to be Nenu with Sudasa Shalai Sarasha, like we said before. Haman didn't want them to come to the party because he didn't want that they should be shown to be that important. So therefore, there was Kirtzon Ish V'Ish, kind of, you know, each one got their way, and therefore the Jews were for the most part not by the party. Another point is also when it says in earnest, they weren't being forced to drink the Ayin Nesef. So Mordechai obviously didn't want them to be forced to drink the Ayin Nesef. Haman didn't want to be forced either. He wanted that if they're going to be drinking it, it should be willingly. So that way they can be punished by the Eidoshter for it. So therefore, in that sense, again, the not forcing anybody to drink or giving people that whatever kind of wine they wanted was both Kirtzon Mordechai and Kirtzon Haman. And then there are various other explanations as well. Okay. Next, the pasuk says, "Gam Vashti Amalka Osa Mishte Noshem Beis Amalkus." It says that Queen Vashti made a party for the women in the royal palace. So now, what do you mean, Beis Amalkus implies the area of the palace that where Ahasuerus and his people are? Beis Hanoshim, by the way, wouldn't you expect that her party is in the section of the palace for the women? Amar Rava, it means Shnei Mudbar Aver Neskavni. You should realize that both Ahasuerus and Vashti intended to promote Znus by their party. So therefore, she's making her party not in Beis Hanoshim, where it's going to be tzniyastik and only women. Rather, she made it in Beis Hamalchus, where the women can mingle with the men. Hainu da'amri inchi, this is like the expression that people say, ihu b'kori, he, the husband, is involved with kori, which are large pumpkins, v'itse b'vutzini, and his wife is with small pumpkins. In other words, big and small pumpkins are the same thing. So it means, in other words, that the husband and wife, when the husband is a noyif, is a guy involved in his nus, very often so is his wife. So the same way, Ahasuerus is an immoral guy who's into his nus, and therefore we're saying so was his wife. So she therefore made her party in a way that would promote his nus. There's a different explanation, actually, that kori and butzini is that kori are plants that have large leaves, and butzini are ones that have smaller leaves. That's how the article explains it. So therefore, it means that he tries to at least hide under the large leaves. She doesn't even bother. She does it shamelessly, even when there's only small leaves to hide her. In other words, in such cases, the wife is more open about her znus. So the same way, Ahasuerus, it doesn't say so clearly in the pasuk that he was doing his party with the intention to promote znus, but by her, it says outright that she made it in Beis HaMalchus to imply that point. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayoyim Ashvi Ketov Leiv Hamelach Vayoyin." On the seventh day, when the king's heart was happy, was good with wine. So, what does that mean? Only on the seventh day, Otarad Hashta Loi Tavli BeBchamra. And what? Until the seventh day, his heart was not good with wine. Wasn't he drinking throughout the party? Amar Rava, it doesn't mean the seventh day of the party, it means Yom HaShvi, Shabbos. It means it was the seventh day of the week, it was Shabbos. Yisrael Eichon V'Shoisin. Now, when the Jewish people eat and drink on Shabbos, Maschilim B'Divrei Torah, B'Divrei Hishbachos. They say Divrei Torah, they say praises to Hashem. Avol Oved Kechavim, Sh'Eichon V'Shoisin. But you see that when the Goyim eat and drink, Maschilim B'Divrei, Ein Maschilim, Ela B'Divrei Tifus, they begin talking about immorality, about Znus. And that's what happened. B'chein b'sudah shalosh rasha. That's exactly what happened by that rasha's sudah, by Achashverosh's sudah. Halalu oimim modius nois. So they started a discussion: which women are the most beautiful? So the people from Modai are saying the women from Modai are the most beautiful. Halalu oimim paritius nois. The other ones are saying the Persians are the most beautiful, and each one is saying that the people from my country are the most beautiful. Amar lahem Achashverosh. So Achashverosh tells them, listen. Kli shani mishtamish boy, I'll prove that you're all wrong. The keli that I use, in other words, the wife that I have and that I have relations with, ain't a loy modi loy parsi ala kasti. She's neither from Modai nor from Paras. She's a kasti, because we said she was a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar. You want to see her, and then you'll see for yourself that she's actually the most beautiful. Amru loy ain, so they said, sure, uvovad shtei aruma. But as long as you show her to us undressed. Now, why are they thinking? First of all, we're saying that they're trying to promote Znus over here, so obviously that would be a good way to do it. There's also Mephoshim explain that they're saying, you know what, if you bring her dressed up in royal robes, of course, anybody who's in royal robes and a crown is going to look beautiful. Bring her without anything, and then we'll see for ourselves how beautiful she is without any adornments. Now, so why did that taka happen? Why did Hashem put that idea in their head? The measure in which a person does, that Hashem measures out to him. Midah keneg midah. Melamed shows a Vashti or a Shah Mavia Benos Yisrael. This teaches us that this wicked Vashti used to take Jewish girls, umachshita naruma, she would strip them naked, but oisa behen malacha b'Shabbos, and she would force them to do work for her on Shabbos. So therefore, midah keneg midah, she was made on Shabbos to be told that she has to appear in front of Achashverosh and everybody at the party naked. That's why also the pasuk says, "Achar advarim ha'ela." It says at the beginning of Perek Beis in the Megillah, after these matters, "Kishoich Hamas Hamalach Achashverosh." When Achashverosh's anger calmed down, "Zocharas Vashti," he remembered Vashti, the Esa Sherasasa, and what she had done, the Esa Shenigzar Aleha, and what had been and what had been decreed against her. So what does that mean? What the Asher Asasa of Esa Shenigzar Aleha? Kishem Shasasa Kach Nigzar Aleha. He realized exactly what she had done is what was Nigzar on her. Because she had done that to Jewish girls, therefore the Eveshter arranged that she got her punishment in the exact same way. Now, when it says about Tamorin Amalkabashti, when it says that she refused to come, so what do you mean? Mechti Pritzah Havoi. We just established that she was a Prutza. We just said that both she and Achashverosh are intending to promote Znus. My time, a loyal soy. So why taka didn't she show up? Omrav Yosef Achanin, Malamach Aporchaba Tsaras. This teaches us that Tsaras started developing on her. Rashi and Tosfos both bring from Yerushalmi that says, how do we know Davka Tsaras? Because later on it describes as a nigzar aleha. The word nigzar is used in connection with Uzziah, Melech Yehuda, who got Tzaraas, and it says on a nigzar v'deis Hashem. So therefore, the word nigzar is related to Tzaraas. So that teaches us that she got Tzaraas. So now she's embarrassed to come. The Masnis Satana Bogavri over Osavazana. In a brice that we learn that Gavriel came and attached a tail to her. So therefore also she's embarrassed to come because she doesn't want to come appearing in front of everybody like that. The Maharal, by the way, says a tail doesn't necessarily have to mean literally a tail as in something that sticks out from the back of her body. It can mean like something extra. It can mean like extra flesh. Like maybe she looked in the mirror, realized that she had gained a couple of pounds, and now she's embarrassed to appear in front of them. But the Eivishka arranged that should happen so that she should be humiliated and not want to come. And therefore that's what got Achashverosh angry at her.